Okay, well, welcome back to the Dan Time Podcast. Folks, I'm your host, Dan McArdle. Thanks for coming along for the ride as week in and week out, I comb the Daniverse, as I call it, for interesting, insightful, impactful guests, people, personalities, performers, you name it. We featured standouts in sports, music, entertainment, sharing stories from people that I think you ought to hear about. Well, what about a bay colt that you need to hear about? That's right. Today, I am elated to be talking about the winner of the 150th Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, Mystic Dan. To speak on Dan's behalf, it brings me great pleasure to welcome part of the ownership group for Mystic Dan, along with his cousin Brent and Sherilyn Gassaway and Daniel Hamby. Today, Lance Gassaway joins me to talk some Mystic Dan. I'm sure he's talked a lot about this three-year-old Kentucky Derby winner, but hopefully he's still excited to cover some more ground today. How are you doing, Lance Gassaway?
Doing great, Dan. And yes, it's been very exciting to be on this trip with the horse, and very excited to be on the air with you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I sure appreciate it. And I hope this joke doesn't sound too cliche, but as I understand it, if we go all the way back here, this story really starts, it goes back to three guys at a bar. Is that right?
That's correct.
Whoever, 10 years ago or so?
Yeah, it's probably 13, 14 years ago, but my brother and Daniel Hamby and myself was in a bar across the street from Oaklawn Park having a few afternoon drinks and end up getting into the horse racing business.
I love it. And at this time, so now you've got the Oaklawn Racing Casino and Resort, but at that time it was just Oaklawn Park?
That's correct. That's correct. Back then it was just, they didn't even have the casino back then.
So you and your dad and a friend, Dan Hamby, were celebrating a good day, a decent day at the racetrack, and a guy approaches you about, he says he's got three Arkansas-bred horses and want to see if y'all were interested.
Yes, but my dad was not actually with me then. It was my brother Greg and myself and Daniel Hamby. My dad, now he went to the races and all, but he wasn't actually with us when we started that. Dad got involved when we bought Mystic Dan's mama, ma'am. When we bought her, that's when my dad got involved.
Uh-huh. Now, people that listen to the show have heard me say this a few times, may bounce around on the timeline a little bit here, but I'm always intrigued with the names of thoroughbred horses, and this story, I guess, is no different. Mystic Tape, people of a certain age, because I got to say, I wasn't familiar with the brand, but this was one of the old Borden brands, I think. It was a cloth tape or electrical tape that Dan Hamby, Daniel Hamby the Third's old man, used to sell this tape. Is that right?
That's correct. He started the company there in Hot Springs. And I'm not familiar with the exact timeline. I think it was in the 70s when that company started. But, yes, his daddy, Dan Hamby, started selling Mystic Tape. Is where it started. Sure did.
It's just such a cool story because it was his turn, or it was the younger Hamby's turn, to name the horse. And he paired the two together. It's got a great ring to it. I'm a Dan. Of course, I'm going to like it, but do y'all kind of test run some of these names and ask around, say, hey, what do y'all think about it? This is what we've decided.
No, so it was three partners. So to kind of give you a little bit of more background. So like after we bought the horses in the bar, the Archibreds, they didn't do, that was just got us, I guess you'd say, got our feet wet into the business. And, we eventually went and purchased a horse named Ma'am, and it was four of us. My dad joined in then, so myself, my brother, Daniel, and Dad joined in, and we bought Ma'am. Well, after Mam's career was over, Dad decided to get out of the breeding process because we was going to make a broodmare out of the mom, Mam.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother decided he didn't want to be a part of it. So me and Daniel was left alone, and that's when I asked Brent and Sherilyn if they'd like to join in on breeding this horse. So then we bred. So it's three of us owners, and we just said, hey, we'll take turns naming these horses, you know. So, yeah, it was Daniel's time, and he picked Mystic Dan. We didn't question nothing. You know, it was his turn. Hey, you name him whatever you want. Sounded good to us.
Now, you mentioned Mam, Mystic Dan's mom, or the they call it the dam.
Right.
Where does Colonel John come into the picture? Is this Mystic Dan's father?
That's his grandfather.
Okay.
That's Mam's daddy. Colonel John was Mam's daddy. Mystic Dan's daddy is Golden Sense.
That's right. I looked up Colonel John, saw he finished sixth in the Derby, the 2008 Kentucky Derby.
Yep.
But speaking of Mystic Dan, so a lot of questions I want to ask here, but I've got to point out that this was in this year's race, this was the closest three-horse photo finish in over 80, or close to 80 years, I guess 1947, 48.
Right.
What are y'all, you know, I know Brian Hernandez, the jockey, he's just twisting in the wind. He's waiting for the results. How are y'all feeling? Are you personally a ball of nerves when this is going on? Are you kind of are you projecting calm, but everybody's holding their breath? What is that like when you're waiting for the results?
You know, so we were about 10 from where we were sitting. We had a suite. All the owner's suites are like right there along the finish line. Okay. So there's 20 different suites there. So I think we were about 10 yards in front of the finish line. Honestly, I thought we won, but you know, we were all hollering, everybody, you know, hollering coming down the stretch and all. I'm sitting there just, you know, after the race, and I'm like, you know, you're trying to catch your breath because it was so close. And Robbie Alvarado looks at me and said, let's go. And I said, well, go where? And he said, well, we got to go down the winner's circle. And I said, well, we don't know if we won yet. He said, oh, we won. Now, he's a jockey. You know, Robbie's a, you know, he won with Swiss Skydiver when Swiss Skydiver won the Preakness and all. And, I mean, he's rode a lot of horses, and I think he's had over 5,000 wins. He'll probably be a Hall of Fame jockey. But he would work the horse and work for Kenny McPeak and had helped train the horse and all. And he was like, come on, man, we got to go. And I'm like, man, we need to make sure. And he said, no, I'm telling you, we won. I'm like, okay. So we take off, you know, and we start heading toward the winner's circle. And about that time, you know, they pop it up that we won. And, of course, as soon as I cross the track, there's – like two state troopers grabbed me and they said, are you Lance Gasway? And I said, yes. They said, well, you need to go. And I'm like, where are we going? What have I done? You know, I'm a country boy from Arkansas. I'm like, what's going on here? And he's well, the governor's got to present you the trophy. So, you know, it's all live and all, you know, so everything's a rush. So really I didn't, you know, we just had a minute or so where we were just even wondering if we won. And I mean, after that, everything was just warp speed, you know, rush to the stage, pictures, press conference after it, all of that. But it was a tense minute, I guess you would say.
Yeah. And, you know, they say that I guess it's common to just say that a winning horse wins by a nose, but this was like half a nose or whatever you would say over Sierra Leone.
It was close. I would say 2 or 3 inches, yeah.
And then Forever Young right behind in third. Yeah, this I watched it on TV, but maybe I just saw the replay right after, and I thought he had it. I thought Mystic Dan had it, but I knew it was extremely close, but I felt pretty good when the decision was pending. Also, reading from some of the reporting right after the race that Mystic Dan got so close to the rail that Brian's boot struck the rail. I don't know if that caused him much concern or not, but
yes, at the head of the stretch, there was just for a split second, there was a gap. The horse moved to the outside. I think it was Fierceness, if I'm not mistaken. Can't remember the horse. Anyway, he moved to the outside a little bit and just a little small gap there, and Brian started heading through it, and the horse squeezed him back down up against the rail, and it actually, hit his boot pretty hard there on the rail, kind of slowed us up a little bit. But he shot on through it, and honestly, the way this horse's turn of foot is, I mean, he has a real good turn of foot there at the head of the stretch, and I thought we was going to pull away and win four or five lengths, and then, of course, Forever Young and Sierra Leone was coming at us hard there at the end. But, yeah, he did hit the rail pretty hard with his boot. Matter of fact, he said he had a mark on it or tore it, and he said, you know, I think I got enough money now where I could buy a new pair.
Now, y'all are in the ownership group, and Kenny McPeak, you know a lot more than the average spectator. I mean, you've seen him. He's won the Arkansas Derby. I'm sorry, finished third in the Arkansas Derby March 30th, won the Southwest Stakes on February 3rd. You know what this colt is capable of. How did you feel going into that day? Is everybody checking the weather the night before? And what do you think when you see the odds? You know, how does the average owner or trainer react when they see 18-1 versus 9-2 or what have you?
You know, odds to me has really never – I really don't even think about the odds. Beans, I guess I grew up, I was an underdog when I played sports. You know, I walked on at college and all. So, you know, to me, it's all about the horse and the heart of the horse. We knew going into the Arkansas Derby, we had a good shot at that race. We just didn't get a good trip. We got hit pretty hard after the first turn with four wide on the first turn. And then starting the backstretch, we get bumped into really hard and almost knocks Brian off the horse. And by the time he gets, you know, resettled up under the horse, we've been lost five lengths. And five lengths in a grade one race, when you something like that happens to you, I mean, unless you got some kind of monster, you're not going to come back and win a race like that. So for us to get third in that race, we felt really good from what the trip we had. So going into the Kentucky Derby, of course, anybody's biggest concern is if you get a good trip. You got 20 horses in there. And, you know, trying to navigate through 20 horses, you gotta have a lot of luck. And we had a jockey that just literally rode the perfect race. And we had a perfect trip, rode the perfect race. The jockey did, and the horse performed, you know.
And Mystic Dan goes on to finish second, the Preakness, finishes eighth in the Belmont Stakes. But I read about, I don't know how common this is, Visit Hot Springs, Arkansas. Visit Hot Springs is planning to release Mystic Dan trading cards. What are your thoughts on that?
They've already released them.
Okay.
And they had a big thing up in Little Rock where they made the cards and all, and the owners, we all went up there and watched the production of the cards and all and approved them, you know. But yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you know, we've given out a lot of these cards. I think originally they were going to make 30,000 of them, and they ended up doubling it, making 60,000, because there was so much demand for them. One thing about Arkansas is when something good goes in Arkansas, sports wise and anything else, the state comes together. Mm-hmm. And you know, you just can't imagine how many calls we've had about people supporting Mystic Dan and, you know, rooting for him. And the state is really good at that.
This was a huge day for the state of Arkansas, going back to the Kentucky Derby.
Absolutely. Kentucky Derby, and, you know, a huge day for, you know, Oaklawn Park. You know, this horse, you know, went through the process there through the Southwest and Arkansas Derby, you know, so that's good attention for Oaklawn Park. And then, you know, naturally myself and the other owners that we have, you know, I went to a small college. That's good, you know, publicity for our college, a small town, communities I live in, Star City, Arkansas, and Gould, Arkansas. People's never heard of them, you know, so it's just good for the whole entire state all around.
Now, I loved reading about, I guess, the night after or the night of the Kentucky Derby. Instead of staying there in Louisville, you're heading back to a VRBO or Verbo home in Lexington, and just saying, look, I don't need all the hustle bustle of the big city or whatever. I'm a small town guy. Did I read that correctly? Was that a quote from you or from Brent?
That's from me. That's me. I'm the governor there of Governor Beshears there of Kentucky there, you know, he was up on the stage, and before we went live, he and I was talking, and he's a very nice guy. We really enjoyed visiting with the governor. And he says to me, so I understand you don't like big crowds. And I said, well, I'm a country boy, you know. So me here in front of 160,000 people is, you know, crazy, you know. And he said, so have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby? And I said, no, sir. And he said, well, would you ever come back? And I said, no, sir, not unless I had a horse in here. I said, he said, well, not to put any pressure on you, since you don't like big crowds, he said, but you're fixing to go in front of 28 million people. And I said, so, yeah, you know, we stay down at Lexington. Every time we go to Louisville to watch one of our horses run and all, it's nothing against the town of Louisville. I mean, CDI was great to us, Churchill Downs there. You know, I like the atmosphere down in Lexington. It's more hometown to me. It's smaller, and that's where all the farms are for the horses. And Kenny's farm, Magdalena's there, and that's where Mammy is with a couple of her babies. So, you know, we get to go see the babies and feed them peppermints, and just, you know, it's just more down to earth, homey to me in Lexington, and not as big. I just feel more comfortable there.
Well, I have a one connection in Lexington. One of my dad's best friends lives in Lexington, so I've enjoyed visiting. It's been a long time. I'd love to go back.
Yeah, I really enjoy Lexington. They have a restaurant there we really like too, called Tony's, and it's right downtown. They're right across from Rupp Arena, but boy, it is really good food.
Well, let's one other thing I wanted to mention, kind of going back to what you were saying, I wanted to add this as well. Brent's wife Sherilyn said, kind of following up on what you're saying there, she said, this, we feel like we're just ordinary people and we've got an amazing horse. Kenny referred to Mystic Dan as a working class horse.
Yes, I mean, that's us. I mean, we're just, hey, I'm a farmer. I grew up, we raised rice, cotton, corn, and soybeans. I mean, I'm 61 years old. I've been farming since I got out of college in 86. I mean, I do other things as well, but I mean, farming's been my livelihood, you know. And I mean, I go out in the dirt on a tractor, and I'm a farmer. So we're just an ordinary, hardworking, blue-collar worker, you know. And this horse, he's kind of like an old soul. I mean, if you've seen this horse, he's just not as hyper as these other horses. He's not as high strung. He walks around and just as calm as he can be. I mean, like nothing shakes him. Reminds me a lot of his mama. Ma'am was a real loving horse. She'd love on you, and you know, you feed her peppermints and just, I mean, literally just kiss on her, love on her, whatever. She wouldn't bite you or nothing. This horse the same way. Mystic's got the same personality as his mama. It's a real laid-back horse.
I'm glad you said that, Lance. I think people might be curious about the relationship that y'all establish with, you know, whether it's one of the owners or the trainer or certainly the jockey, you know, Brian and Kenny, but talk about the relationship that y'all develop with Ma'am and Mystic Dan and Golden Sense.
Yeah, you know, that's so Bobby and I, Bobby Joe, she's my fiance. We're fixing to be married.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We, you know, we go to Oakland every weekend when it's going from now. It starts up usually around the first or second week of December and goes till Derby Day, May the 4th. And every weekend we go to Hot Springs, and we got a place over there, so we'll go over and stay and go to the races usually on Friday and Saturdays, and we'll get up in the mornings. I'm an early riser, a farmer, so I'm an early riser, and we go to the barns and watch the horses work out and go by and feed them peppermints and just enjoy being around them. You know, they're fascinating athletes, and to me, it's just, you know, I just love watching them work out, love watching being around them, talking with the trainers, the jockeys. I mean, we got a lot of friends, you know, that's trainers and jockeys. And we just enjoy being around that. It's just different for me. You know, being an athlete, it's a competition to me. Number one, I want to have good horses, and you know, you want to win. And I'm a very competitive person by nature, and I don't know, probably to a fault. You know, I'm real competitive. I like winning.
Well, Lance, in 2015, I'm glad you mentioned this because I wanted to kind of take a section of this call and highlight your playing career. And 2015, you're inducted into the University of Arkansas at Monticello Hall of Fame. You mentioned you were a walk-on with the Boll Weevils. Take me back a little bit to 84, 85. I don't remember which year you're a freshman or an upperclassman, and we'll talk about you still hold some records at that school.
Yeah. And 85 was my senior year. And, I have a few records that I'd set down there. You know, my college career, I walked on down at UAM. My cousin, my two cousins and my brother actually were playing football down there. And one of my cousins was an All-American tight end. So I kind of looked up to him, and he was 2 years older than I was. And, you know, walked on, had a good career. You know, football's it's a team sport, you know, and to me, you know, when you give individual accolades like that, I'm not big on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a quarterback that was, he's in the Hall of Fame there. You know, I had a good receiving core I was a wide receiver, and I had a good receiving core that, you know, complimented me, you know, that took pressure off me. And then, you know, you got offensive line, and, you know, we had two guys. I know one of them was an academic All-American, Ray Howard. And you know, it takes 11 guys out there. So, you know, and I mean, yeah, I got inducted in the Hall of Fame, but to me, it was our team that should have been there, because one person don't do that. It takes a team effort.
It sure does. And I'm sure, like you said, even with the years going by, once a competitor, always a competitor. And I always wonder, because, you know, I wouldn't even call it the dream, but the dream came to an end for me a lot earlier. Do you miss it that first year or two once you've taken the uniform off and you're not going to be playing at that level? How did guys transition? Was it easy for you? Or,
you know, I actually got the opportunity to try professionally. We had a coach at Henderson State University, Sporty Carpenter. He was good friends with my father-in-law back at that time. And he had a friend that was an agent, and he got me a free agent contract up in, or not a free agent contract, but a free agent camp up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So I went up to actually try out professionally. And and I missed it a year. So the year I graduated, I was getting ready to go, and the NFL folded. That's when the NFL went on a strike. And so I didn't get a chance to try out that first year. And the second year, I had to sit out a year, and I just kept training and all. And I went the next year and tried out, and ended up had a pretty decent camp, and got my knee hurt like on the last day. In the second half of the game, we have like a big scrimmage game, and got my knee hurt, and I didn't go get it fixed. And sure enough, they called me to come up, and I just wasn't ready. So I just wasn't meant to be, but it was hard for me to let go of the game. I mean, I really struggled going to watch high school games and, you know, that kind of stuff, and kind of stayed away for it for 3 or 4 years. And then a buddy of mine at Star City, the high school I went to, was a head coach, and he says, "Hey, I want you to come work with my receivers one day, if you don't mind." I said, "Sure, I'll come." So I went over and started working with the receivers, trying to help them, coach them some. And then he ended up asking me to be the offensive coordinator. So then I got back in it, and there goes that competitiveness. You know, you're offensive coordinator, you're wanting to outdo the guy on the other side, and you're wanting to win. So I did that for 4 or 5 years. I was just a volunteer guy that helped out there at the school, my old school, and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've got some friends. In fact, one that appeared on the podcast early in this project, he played quarterback at University of Central Florida. And you could just tell. I mean, I think I would feel the same way, that it's always in your blood, and they don't make movies. I know Field of Dreams is a baseball movie, but they don't make movies like that if there wasn't if most people who played their chosen sport didn't want to keep playing it as long as they could.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%. And, you know, the only reason I got out from coaching is that my kids, my boys at that point, were about to get to the age from junior high moving up to senior high. And you know, I didn't want – I wanted my kids to do what they did on their own, you know, not because of who I was or what I accomplished. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think that would be fair to them with me being a coach or somebody. You know how people are, the, you know, hey, he's playing because he's his son or whatever. You know, I said, no, I want to be away from that. I want him to stand on his own. So that's when I walked out and just became a spectator at that point.
Lance, real quick, just kind of anecdote here, looking over the schedule from 1985. I grew up a lot. Most of the time I was growing up was in the Birmingham area, and I see that second game of this season, y'all played Samford University.
Yes. Yes. They had just, like, started their football program back then,
mm-hmm.
if I remember right. They were, like, might have been their first or second year to start their program back or just started up one.
Talking about records, Seth, but sometimes I just like to ask about memories. Are there any plays that nobody talks about that you remember that you – that was particularly exciting that you were a part of, or maybe a long drive, 80, 90-yard length of the field drive under the gun or anything like that?
You know, we was playing Henderson. Probably the biggest thing that sticks out to me, we was playing Henderson, and this is one of the games I'd set a record on. And this corner, he was a good corner, so it was a, I guess you'd say, a lot of publicity about him guarding me, you know, that game.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept working the sideline. We just, Joe Don and I, and Joe Don had the coach, you know, he had the right. He could check off any time to any play. Well, this corner kept playing off me, so we kept running these out routes, you know. I mean, you set a record when you just keep running out routes, okay? We keep running these out routes, and we're back in the huddle, and I look at Joe. I said, he's ready. And he said, you sure? And I said, I'm telling you, he's ready. So I could tell this corner was wanting to hop that route, you know. And so we run a out and up, you know, wheel route. And as soon as I turn up, I hear the corner say, oh, shit. I just sticks in my head. It was a touchdown, and, you know. But that kind of stuff like that just really sticks in your head.
I love it. Well, I could talk to you about the football stuff for an entire episode as well. Coming back to Mystic Dan here for a second. Now, a big deal for Arkansas and for Oaklawn, Horses, some previous names some people might be familiar with, Zenyatta, Rachel Alexander, American Pharoah, certainly. Smarty Jones, about 20 years ago.
Yep.
How does it feel to be kind of a mentioned in the same breath as American Pharoah or Smarty Jones?
Well, you know, that American Pharoah, if I'm not mistaken, was the only other cards that they ran through, like these trading cards at Oaklawn. So, yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable to think that, you know, we're in the same breath as an American Pharoah, Rachel Alexander, Smarty Jones, all of them. I mean, it's just very humbling, very humbling.
And I'm sure people ask what's next for Mystic Dan, and maybe it hasn't been decided upon, but anything you can speak to about Mystic Dan? And
yeah, you know, the Belmont, you know, a lot of it, he had a mucus after the race. We scoped him because mm-hmm. we knew he didn't have that turn of foot at the head of the stretch like he normally does. And when they get mucus in their throat, they have trouble breathing. And also he had a 4 out of 10, the way they kind of scale it, you know, on a laryngitis or sore throat. So he had obviously picked up some kind of cold that week. So we decided to give him 30 days off. And in all fairness to the horse, probably, you know, he had ran three grade one races, the Triple Crown, in 5 weeks there. So I'm sure his immune system, as an athlete, you know, you get beat down, you get tired, even as a human, you know, you go work. You know, some people have to work 24-hour shifts. You know, you go work a shift like that, and your body get, you know, you get beat down, you get tired. And I'm sure a Mystic's body his immune system was probably beat down a little bit, which was made him susceptible to a cold or whatever. So we're going to give him 30 days rest where he's just going to turn him out, let him be a horse, let him eat grass, and just relax for 30 days, and then we're going to bring him back in training and get him ready for the Traverse Stakes. And I think it's like August 24th, and then possibly the Pennsylvania Derby the next month in September, and then shooting for the Breeders' Cup. That's the plans for him.
Well, I'm so excited to be talking about Mystic Dan and have been following him during this exciting ride, and to get some inside perspective from you, Lance, and some stuff that maybe my listeners are, hopefully this is enlightening for people. How about, now this is just some extra tidbits here, but Kenny McPeak had a Triple Crown victory over 20 years ago. I cannot believe this. I had to look at it two or three times, a 70-1 favorite. Sarava, am I pronouncing that right?
Tejano Run, wasn't it? No, you're right. You're right.
The 2002 Belmont Stakes.
Yes. I can't remember the name of that guy, that horse, but yes, you're exactly right. He did.
And I agree with you on odds, and just from my perspective, but 70-1, that's got a...
You know, there's something I always told somebody, and there's so much truth to this, especially a while ago. You said, okay, well, we're not literally talking to Mystic Dan. You know, we can't, but that's a problem. A lot of people will come up to you before the race. Well, what do you think about your horse? Well, I don't know. I went to the barn this morning. He wouldn't talk to me. And there's what happened with the Belmont. You know, we scoped that horse the week before. We had to work the week before the Belmont and worked him. And they scope them after they work them because it gets their, you know, their blood flowing good, gets their everything's going good on the horse. And that's when you can really tell if there's something wrong with their airway, their breathing, and all that kind of stuff. So if you just went, he woke up in the morning, you scoped him, you wouldn't see nothing, even if there was something there, unless it was inflamed throat, you know, like the laryngitis. But as for the mucus, you would never see it because it hadn't come up. So that morning, I mean, or during that week sometime, he caught a cold, because that Saturday before the race, everything was good. He had no mucus, nothing. We checked him right after the work. So, you know, if we would have got up and scoped him the morning of the race, we wouldn't have seen nothing other than maybe a little bit of laryngitis, you know.
Right.
So that's the bad thing about horse racing. These suckers can't talk to you, so you don't really know how they feel. Whereas an athlete, you know, you get up, how you feel today? Well, I feel real good. Well, if you got a cold, you're not going to be able to breathe as good either, and you're not going to perform as well. So these are high-performance athletes, and anytime they have something like that, it can happen. So, you know, there's some days that a 70-1 feels good, and maybe the favorite over here don't, you know, and, hey, it was his day. It happens.
That's an excellent point. I'm glad you mentioned that. It sounds simple, but, yeah, you can't talk to the horse. He can't express, you know, if he's feeling ill or if something's aching or something that just can't be diagnosed.
Yep, the only thing that they can really do, and, you know, all the trainers, you know, we have Brad Cox that trains some of our horse, or one of my horses as well, and Brad's trained other horses for me, and Kenny, they're good trainers. But, man, these guys – their hands are tied, because the only thing they can go by is how good the horse is eating, how good he's moving, and they check them every day. You know, they'll rub their legs, you know, and if there's heat in it, you know, naturally there's something there. But they do everything they can to make sure the horses are ready. But just when it all comes down to it, the horse can't talk to them.
Well, Lance, I got to say, I so appreciate your time today. And if we get an opportunity to talk some more Mystic Dan, I'd certainly love to. And this has just been fantastic.
Well, Dan, I really enjoyed being on your show. And anytime you want to talk, just give me a call and we'll have a little conversation.
Yeah, this has just been a thrill. For the Dan Time podcast, I'm serious, folks. I'm really hitting a peak here with this episode, because you just can't. This is the stuff, sincerely, it's the stuff dreams are made of. Mystic Dan, I think. It's got to be a lot of racing fans that find I'm sure this happens all the time, Lance, where people hear a horse's name and it reminds them of their grandmother or reminds them of a best friend or something like that. I bet you hear stories like that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of people, you know, go to the races, especially ladies. You know, they'll go to the races, well, I just betting on this because of the name, you know. So you hear a lot of that.
And Mystic Dan certainly was not expected to win, and what a thrill it was that day at Churchill Downs.
Absolutely. It was an unbelievable day, something we'll never forget, and all, you know, for myself and my owners and my family. You know, I don't know if you know this, but it was even more so rewarding to myself that the day that Mystic Dan won, a year earlier, my dad passed away on that same day.
Yes, sir. I meant to bring that up here in our conversation. If you got just a minute, since we're right off of Father's Day, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your dad and what he meant to you and the bond that y'all had.
Yeah, Dad, you know, he got us into racing, I guess you would say. I mean, he liked to go to the horse races, him and Mom. And Dad loved the dog races as well over in West Memphis. And I'll never forget the first race that I ever bet on with Dad back then. You know, in the 70s, they didn't have live racing like they do now on all these racing channels. All they had was at 10 o'clock news, and they scrolled the results down on the TV. You'd see just the race results. They'd scroll them on there. And Dad had let us bet a horse once and put $2 to win on it, and the horse won. And I remember we were so excited to get home to get our $14. But that's kind of where we got started. And Dad, we'd go to dog races together, and of course, over at Oakland. And, you know, he loved it. And after my brother got out, just my dad and I had bought some horses together, and my brother just kind of got out. He's allergic to them, so, you know, he couldn't enjoy the part of going to the barn and all that kind of stuff. The hay would get him all, eyes all swollen up and all. Mm-hmm. So my dad and I just kept doing it ourselves, and we actually had a horse in 2020 named Wells Bayou that won the Louisiana Derby, and we were the leader for points to go to the Kentucky Derby. But then the COVID hit, and they delayed the Kentucky Derby till September, and we ran in the Arkansas Derby and got hurt, so we didn't get to run a Kentucky Derby then. So I've been blessed to have two horses that's actually qualified for the Kentucky Derby. But Dad, he loved it. We have another horse right now that's running named Gould's Gold. That's where my dad grew up, in Gould, Arkansas. And actually, we're going to run in the Ohio Derby Saturday. So y'all tune in and watch the race up there.
Hey, there's another one. Gould's Gold, for people listening to this show, add him to your watch list. I love this. I love this stuff. And you've got boys as well. You have one or two sons?
I got two sons. Mm-hmm.
Well, happy Father's Day, Lance. I hope y'all had a great day yesterday.
We did, and I appreciate it. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
And y'all have a great rest of the week, and here's to Mystic Dan. And thanks so much to Lance for making time to do this, and wish y'all nothing but success.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having us on. We appreciate it.
Okay. Y'all have a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast.